This is Shooting Spaces with Rich Baum and Brian Berkowitz.
Welcome to Shooting Spaces, a real estate photography podcast. This is Rich Baum from Sacramento, California.
And Brian Berkowitz here from New York. What's going on, Rich? How you been?
Beautiful, beautiful weather up here in Sacramento. It's gorgeous. It's been windy as heck, which is great because I'm getting back to kiteboarding and windsurfing, and it's just all around good. And I've been busy working.
Yeah,
it seems like you've been busy working too.
Yeah, I shot, I don't know, I haven't looked it up. I don't know if it's on paper as the biggest one I've ever done. But yesterday I shot a 16,300 square foot house. It was insane. 7 hours.
I can't even comprehend.
I was
by yourself. Did you have somebody help you?
I was by myself, and that was a big mistake. I didn't realize how big it was until I pulled up, and I was like, boy, this is going to be a big one. But it was fun. Got it done. Client liked it. And that's good.
And it looked so freaking palatial. I saw the aerial shot.
17 acres.
And
we're all in the wrong business.
You can't even imagine it. Oh, but that goes without saying. But still, you know, just good. I can't wait to see the pictures. How many are you going to deliver from something like that?
I don't know. My editor has them now, but probably close to 100 or something I've shot there. I was there all day. So,
yeah.
All right. Awesome. Well, we have an awesome guest today. So let's get right to it. First, I want to say a little something from our sponsors, HD Photo Hub. Provide your clients with the convenience of online ordering and scheduling with HD Photo Hub's new smart scheduling system built specifically for real estate photography business. With HD Photo Hub, you'll save precious admin time with an all-in-one system to deliver your images, videos, 3D scans, and property marketing kits, along with built-in client invoicing, order management, photographer payroll, and so much more. Check out hdphotohub.com to find out more. And with that, I will introduce our guest, Jared Bauman. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Well done. Well,
Well, it's sort of like Baum with an N at the end.
Yep, it is. You have a lot of experience saying that.
Exactly. Jared is from 201 Creative. You're a marketing, I guess, an online marketing firm specializing in photography. Is that correct?
Yeah, we work with people in all kind of all the creative niches, to be honest with you, photography being one of those.
Cool. And you are also now tasked with managing the PFRE blog, which is a whole another ball game in itself. But before we get into all this stuff, why don't you, I guess, give us the 30-second elevator pitch on you, how you got into this, your background, and how you started 201 Creative.
Yeah, sure. Well, happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure. Like you said, currently run a digital marketing agency, but start off actually running a photography studio here in San Diego, California. I did event and commercial photography myself and several other photographers. I sold that company in 2012. The company's still there, actually probably doing better than when I ran it, so be that as it may. But went on to co-found an editing company for professional event photographers, ran that for a while, and always had used digital marketing at whatever company I was at to grow it. And so a couple of years ago, moved over full-time to doing digital marketing and for clients. So that is what we do. Like you said, digital marketing comprised of mainly three areas: SEO, social media, and email marketing.
Cool. So I think we'll kind of break this episode down into two parts. One, talk a little bit about marketing and SEO for photographers and maybe some tips and tricks they can do to boost from an SEO standpoint, boost their rankings. And I guess from a social media standpoint to just grow their following. And then we'll talk a little bit about PFRE and what you do for the blog and maybe, you know, I don't know how much you can divulge, but talk about what the plans are for the future and where you are and all that stuff. You know, I see a lot of feedback online with the blog, so I can tell you what I see that other people are saying, and hopefully we can, you know, find out where the blog is at.
Sounds good.
But I guess back to SEO, and let's just for the sake of being fair to everyone, let's start at the most generic level, explaining what exactly SEO is and how we have to utilize it to increase our search rankings on Google.
Yeah. Good question. I mean, a lot of people, I think my parents might still not exactly know what SEO is. So it's kind of a bit of a confusing topic for a lot of people. It changes rapidly as well. So it's good to start from the basics. SEO is an acronym for search engine optimization. And at the end of the day, it's making your site more friendly and more visible for search engines like Google to crawl it and then rank it. We probably all use Google every day or some variation of that, whether you're using Bing, but about 95-98% of searches are done in Google. So for the rest of the conversation, we might as well just call it Google. But search engines in general crawl the web all day looking for the best results for any number of queries. And when it comes to your business, the better you can position your website, the better you can position the content that's on it, the better that you can present it, the better it gets crawled and the better it ranks. And when it ranks, you get traffic, what's called organic traffic, to the different pages and the different queries that you're ranking for. And that's a really valuable source of business if you know how to rank your website and then turn that into a customer base.
Sure, and SEO is changing very rapidly all the time. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I see it or understand it is that Google is getting, using Google as an example for all the search engines, they're getting smarter and smarter to the point where you don't have to optimize the same way you needed to optimize 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. Is that the case?
Yeah. The sophistication levels that are involved in a modern search engine like today, at where we're recording in 2021 they just make SEO of 5 years ago look like kind of like child's play. It's so much more advanced. It's so much more intricate. The way that Google ranks pages is so much more sophisticated in the way that they process information. They're not just looking at keywords anymore. Keywords is a very popular buzzword that a lot of people will probably have heard of. And keywords are still very important, but it's not just about using keywords. It's about the entire content that you have and how all of the content and all of the copy all relate back. They're looking for things that are more broad in nature. One of the acronyms that they give us is EAT, which stands for expertise, authoritativeness, trustworthiness. They're trying to figure out not just which websites are about real estate photography, but which are the most expert, the most authoritative, and the most trustworthy about the topic. And their algorithms have had to get really sophisticated in order to do that.
Cool. So let's get into, I guess we'll get a little technical. And for those that aren't so technical, we apologize. But you know, there's two types of SEO, I guess. There's on-page and off-page. And I guess we're not going to really dive into off-page because that's not really relevant to what we can there are ways we can get off-page SEO done for ourselves too. But if you don't mind quickly, give us, a 30-second explanation of on-page versus off-page. And then we'll probably, I guess it's better to spend the bulk of the time talking about on-page because that's things that we can go in tomorrow and fix on our website.
Yeah, on-pages, they're both important. You know, you're going to find that backlinks, other websites that link to your website are still the number one, that's still the biggest indicator of rankings, but those are very hard.
That's off page.
And that's off page. That's right. Yeah. So, and it's very hard to get into that. I mean, as an agency, we do that for our clients. But it really requires a lot of specialization. On page, on the other hand, what happens on your website is another big factor in your rankings. And that's something that you can control while you're listening to this podcast, you know? So yeah, you're exactly right. As a photographer, you're going to want to start with your on page and hopefully that'll get you enough of a kick to start to see the traction. On-page has to do with what is on your website. So it's everything from all of the technical details, how your website is architected or organized, the words that you're using in your headers and your titles and your meta descriptions. It's down to the content that you write, the images that you publish, how fast your site goes, if you have any broken links. All of these things factor in to an on-page experience. One of the biggest on-page kind of indicators is the content you have on your website. And this is actually an area that a lot of photographers, we see challenges with across the board. And so it's a good area for us to touch on. But the content is incredibly valuable for Google to understand what it is you do. And as photographers who rely perhaps more so than most on their imagery than maybe other brands and other niches, you know, if you're a plumber, you're probably not reliant on your imagery nearly as much as you are as a professional photographer, as an example. But photographers can really struggle with this because they rely on their imagery, which is great for a client who's directly accessing your website, perhaps someone who visits from social media. But for a search engine, very difficult for them to understand much about your website when it's photo heavy and content light. But going back to on-page, the best way to think about it is the things that are happening on your website, the things that are happening to connect your website, and the pages that are that you have on your website.
Yeah, so a good example is of on-page versus off-page. Off-page, for instance, let's say you take the PFRE blog, which is probably one of the top authoritative figures for real estate photography out there. And, you know, I write an article for PFRE, which I've done in the past, and then PFRE links back to my website. That's I guess, as good of a backlink as you can get, because PFRE is known as the most authoritative figure out there for real estate photography. So that's a great example of off-page SEO versus on-page, like you said, is things that are taking place that are in my direct control on my website.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yep.
Were you about to ask something before I interrupted you, Rich? No, I thought you were about to ask that.
No. Okay. And by the way, everybody out there in podcast land, I am actually here. So there's a lot of questions I'm going to have for you, Jared. And some are going to be, regarding my YouTube channel, how I can get more out of my YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. But just in discussing what you were talking about, the PFRE blog years ago, Larry linked an article I did or a video I did on my pole photography. And that really—
I know that article, actually. I've gotten to know that article.
That jump started a lot of stuff, man, I'll tell you. And it just to show you that, and I don't really follow it enough to really have researched to see how it impacted me, but I know it did. And it was incredible. So yeah, if you can work the system and get stuff like that, that is really, really beneficial.
Yeah, backlinks are, I think a lot of people overthink it sometimes, which is, I guess, easy for me to say. We have a lot of processes around helping clients with backlinks, but typically a lot of us miss backlink opportunities that are right in front of us from other people that are in the industry, clients that have used our services. And there's so many ways to get really creative. We could probably do an entire podcast on a number of creative but easy ways to go out and earn backlinks in a very natural way, a way that would be above brow with Google and whatnot. And like you mentioned, if you get the right backlink, not only does it help your website holistically, but you can really see some immediate and long-term traffic benefits from it.
Now, is there anything you can recommend that people can, before we have you again on the podcast, but is there something, a resource, a website, where would people go to learn more about what SEO is and how you can easily, that's the big key too, is trying to like keeping an Instagram page going. You know, it's a lot of work, man. I post almost a new photo, well, not as much anymore, but a new photo every day. How do people get into this and try and learn how to easily increase whatever they've got, even just a little bit? Where does one go?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people get overwhelmed with specifically SEO, mm-hmm. but really marketing overall. And that, we can get paralysis by analysis or paralysis through paranoia. And so the 80-20 rule really applies when it comes to digging your heels in. And specifically with SEO, 20% of the work is probably going to give you 80% of the value. I produced a course for photographers on all the marketing concepts that we hit upon in our agency. So SEO, content, social media and email marketing. So it's a pro EDU course. I'm sure we can drop a link for it in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, I can personally
vouch for the course because I told you before we even met, I watched it a couple of years ago when you released it. So.
Oh, great. Well,
and that's an offsite situation, right?
Yes, it is.
We're going to link it and you're going to benefit from us linking it.
That's right? Exactly right. Well, I don't know. So you'll have to call Gary because he'll get all the benefit, okay. But I'll get some benefit in the long run. But it's from an SEO standpoint, it's pro EDU that's winning in that scenario.
That's kind of what you're talking about, though, you know, how you can get creative and start doing a lot of this. Yeah.
And you know what?
So this was the reason, but I'll tell you, getting interviewed on podcasts is one of the best ways to build backlinks in a very natural, organic way, because you can get on a show that you have a lot of expertise in, provide value, and then you usually end up with a link. And if you don't, you can always ask for one, and chances are really high that they'll link to your website. And that's a great way to build a backlink. So, you know, Brian, I don't know what you think about that, but
if anybody wants to interview myself or Rich, please email us.
Come on, brother. Brother Jared, but also, Mr. Bauman.
Also, just ask too. A lot of the times it's as simple as that. I had my images about 2 months ago featured on Dwell.com on a house I photographed. And they had no bank links. And I emailed the author, because on the bottom of dwell.com, there's an option to email the author of the article. And I said, you know, they credited me for the shots. And I said, hey, do you mind just in the credit, just, you know, linking back to my website? And they said they can't do it, but I'll gladly put a link on the bottom. All photos provided by Brian Berkowitz. And they put a link back, and that's from dwell.com. So it was literally as simple as asking. And they said, no problem. So
I had a recent experience just like that. I wrote a guest post for someone. I was on their podcast, and then they asked if I could write a guest post kind of summarizing what I spoke, what we talked about. So I did. And then about 6 months later, I was looking something up, and I noticed that a couple of other websites had linked to this guest post I'd written. And so that's great. But again, those links were going to that guest post. And so I just reached out to them and said, hey, I'm glad you found my guest post valuable. Would you mind linking my name to my marketing agency? And three out of four of them said, no problem. And, you know, it's three links right there.
Cool. So nowadays it's much easier to, I guess, take care of your on-page SEO. You know, no matter what platform you're on, whether you're WordPress, Squarespace, Wix, whatever they are, almost every page you're on literally has an SEO tab, and you can literally put in a lot of your on-page stuff. So maybe let's talk about some advice as to, I guess, the two or three main things you should put on every page: a title, description. I mean, are keywords still relevant? People say yes, people say no, I don't know. But obviously description and title are the most important, besides content. What are things people should maybe look for in their titles, as far as, especially in our region where we're geographic, maybe add some geography to them and stuff like that, to try and go that route.
Yeah, you brought up, you kind of segued that really nicely. We work with local clients and we work with national clients, or, you know, non-local clients is probably a better way to put it. They're not necessarily national, it could be international, but local SEO is a little bit different. Same exact premise as what we've already been going over, but you have to add a location to the end or beginning of that search query. It's like an added parameter. You know, as an example, if you just search real estate photography, you're probably going to get given results that are local to your area, even though you didn't type a city or a location in there. And that's because Google knows, basically, because they're tracking you, but they know where you are. And they know that, generally speaking, real estate photography, when that search is entered, you're actually looking for local real estate photography. You're not searching for the generic, you know, Wikipedia definition of it or something. And so the local SEO component becomes really important, because you want to attach that to almost everything that you do in some way, shape, or form, whether it's in the page title or in the description or in the content on the page. But yeah, keywording in general is not nearly as important in the idea that you work specific keywords in. You know, the old days of what we call keyword stuffing, that's, you know, irrelevant now at this point. However, what's really important is that you do use keywords, or words that are key to describe what you do. And you need to also use words, and this is where a lot of content and having more content comes into play. You need to use more than just the word to describe it. You need to surround it with descriptions of what you do. Let me give you an example. This is an example I give a lot, but if someone types wedding band into Google, what kind of results, what kind of pages do you think Google is going to return? Okay. So Rich, you're pointing your ring. Brian, what first came to mind for you?
Probably YouTube videos.
Yep. Okay. So you're thinking music, and Rich is thinking, wedding rings.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is Google probably doesn't really have any idea which one you are looking for, but the deeper question is, when you write an article or when you have a page that's about wedding bands, how does Google know whether you're talking about music or whether you're talking about rings? And the way that they do that is by they look at the words that surround the word or word choices around wedding band. And if they have words like carat and 24 and diamond, metal, these kinds of things, ring, then they know that it's about the wedding band that Rich pointed to. But if they have words like DJ and live music and trumpet and four-piece orchestra, well, then, Brian, they're going to understand that it's about live music or some form of music. So the words we use around our keyword is perhaps equally as important as the words we're trying to rank for. So as a real estate photographer, you need to also use all the right terms and all the right descriptors of what you do in addition to your keyword or variation of keywords. And that's a really big deal. And that's probably the most important thing. It's more important than getting some specific word in some title at some exact point.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, for me personally, I'm out on Long Island. I don't know if you knew that, all the way on the East Coast. And when I was starting my business, I started my business solely on SEO. SEO and Google My Business is what built my business. And I kind of knew when I started where I wanted to go with my business, and I ranked, or I SEO'd, if that's a verb, I SEO'd my site accordingly, using words like luxury or high end and stuff like that.
Yep.
And, you know, push comes to shove, I started getting calls from a lot of higher end realtors and luxury realtors. And that's how I basically broke into that higher end business, solely by just adding these descriptors on top of, you know, luxury Long Island real estate photographer or some combination like that. So yeah, go exactly what you're going after.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, there's a number of other tips we could go through and kind of fly through some tips for specifically for photographers, at least from what we see commonly, and kind of, you know, go through I think you said top three. I could probably give you three or four or five,
sure.
You know, quick wins that I think most photographers from an SEO standpoint usually will gain value from, unless you're kind of doing things different than what we usually see.
Sure. Well, I've got a specific question for you that's pertinent to something I did today. But first, I want to pay the bills and read a little thing from HiGuide. Are you looking to expand your real estate photography business? Stand out from the crowd by offering 3D tours, accurate room measurements, square footage calculations, and professionally drafted floor plans, all from a click of a button with a state-of-the-art iGuide camera system. And Brian, you know this very well. Get your first 5 standard iGuides up to 3,000 square feet free by adding the code SHOOTINGSPACES in the referral section at camera purchase. Go iGuide.com to learn more.
I did anyway, a 16,000 square foot iGuide yesterday.
Yeah, how long did that take you?
It was about an hour or 20. It wasn't so bad. It was pretty quick. Pretty damn quick, yeah.
Jerry, can you imagine 16,000 square feet?
No, I was hearing you guys talk about that. I would. All I see is dollar signs in terms of maintenance.
Hey.
Well, when you own it, you're not going to get that house. But when you own it, you don't even look at that. Imagine that.
Jesus. I know.
Wait till you see the aerial picture of this place. Anyway, listen, if I can, I'd like to ask a question. Today, I released a new YouTube video on my YouTube channel. I got 33,000 subscribers, do really well, but I could always do better. And one thing I've noticed is I can't find out where the tags are going, but it was really nice that you, keywords. Tags. It's really nice that you said it doesn't really matter anymore. Maybe they took them down. But my question is, I made the title "What I Am Looking For in My Ambient Image," and that's basically what it's about. What I'm looking for in my ambient image. What could I say in a title, and what the length that they allow on YouTube? What could I put in there to add that would be make it more towards all kinds of photography? Because a lot of things I do, or everything I do, is real estate photography related. But I know the guys that get so many people, so many hits, so many views, they're doing more generic. So it's not such a specific genre. So what could I do to put in my title? And also, what could I do to put in the description? What kind of words, what should I be thinking about?
It's a great question. couple questions there, a couple answers there. Number one, mm-hmm. you have an established YouTube page. You have a good set of followers, clearly a history, clearly trust with the YouTube algorithm. And so you can go after bigger topics and rank for them than someone who's new with a YouTube account. My recommendation is if you're a, if you're a newer YouTuber, if you have a new YouTube account, you want to go more for the long tail or the more descriptive, narrowed down search topic. And that would be expressed in your title. And so you would probably be more specific and less generic. And as you gain more trust, as you get more subscribers, and as your videos get more views, you can start to branch into bigger topics. Now, once you get to where you're at, you can go after the bigger topics. Couple things to note here. Now, a lot of people get this confused. We talk about this with clients as we help them out with YouTube. There's the thumbnail that you have, which you can upload into YouTube, and that's what's displayed as people are scrolling through. That does not help you rank any higher or for any more search terms, but it increases or can increase your conversions once you do arrive in a search feed. And then there's your title, and your title is indicative for what you rank for. Oftentimes, though, if your title is not on point for what the search was specific for, then you won't get very many conversions. So one very key thing for you to look at is to make sure that your title is a more broad searchable term and your graphic or your thumbnail is going to entice them and get them to click. You want to make sure that stands out compared to the other ones. Now for your title, what I would do is standard keyword research. And what you want to do with YouTube, there's some tools you can use, but honestly, YouTube gives you the keys to the kingdom. And you just need to start typing variations of ambient photography, ambient image into Google, into the search operator, and see what they give you. Those dropdowns of suggested searches are their most popular searches in Google's mind as it relates to that topic. And so I could tell you what I think it is, but it really doesn't matter. And I never tell our clients what keywords to write for. We always do research to see what people are actually searching for. And that's the best way in YouTube to quickly get a good idea for what people are searching for and then work those words, do a little bit of research around variations of that topic, make a list of the words and try to come up with a title that makes sense, but works as many of those terms in as you can.
But one thing I would think to add into that that title would be for my real estate photography photos, would adding real estate photography in the title help, or would that not really mean anything?
That would, yeah. Because, yeah, you had mentioned at the outset you wanted to go more broad, and so that was why I mm-hmm. didn't bring that up. But going back okay. to the original point, let's say that you are a YouTube channel and you're just starting out, you're going to want to focus on probably a specific type of photography, a specific genre. But then as you get bigger and you get more authority with the YouTube algorithm, you can start to expand out and target, you know, perhaps more broad nature or more just photography in general.
Great. Awesome.
I need to get on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. You do. YouTube is.
No, again, trust me. Trust me, you don't.
For SEO purposes.
I'm lucky I got in a long time ago. I've been doing it about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people doing it now. And I am really fortunate because I even told my wife today, when I go to reply to my comments, it's really weird. I never get anybody, I get almost no spam and I never get anybody really giving a thumbs down. I get a couple of thumbs downs, but it's amazing. And I'm just blessed because I think it could be terrible if you're just getting in now and you get cranky people that just want to give you a hard time. So
a lot of cranky
same thing with Instagram, you know, same
a lot of cranky people Instagram. On Instagram, a lot of yeah. cranky people, I guess.
So I got, before we shift over to, I guess, PFRE, I have two final questions for you regarding SEO. The first is, we're obviously all photographers, about imagery itself. And I know you mentioned page load speed. So I know there's obviously an art or a science to resizing properly, as well as tagging. So let's talk a little bit about this because, you know, I went through several reiterations of my website where I just didn't resize them images properly. And now I had to go back and resize everything. And I use tinyjpeg.com to resize everything. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Rich. Talk a little bit about, you know, proper sizing to affect your page load speed and obviously tagging your images properly.
Yeah, site speed is becoming more and more important in Google's eyes. It's always been important in your users' eyes. I think, though, that as more and more people are moving to viewing on a mobile platform, it's becoming of increasingly importance. So a couple things there. The vast majority of photographers have their images too large. And when I say too large, I mean, they don't pass what is considered general acceptable page speeds, load times, these sorts of things. They're considered to be a bad experience. And that's because they're making their images too large. And that's, it is the catch 22. And I get that. A couple ways around that. Obviously you want your images to be large and impactful. Real estate photography, I can't imagine there being a more important, specific niche of photography to have very large, impactful images to showcase the type of work that you do. So it's really a conundrum, but nonetheless, compression is going to be your best friend. You want to make sure you're adding compression to all of your images and getting them sized to a maximum compression. And there's different services that can do that. There's JPEG Domini. There's, you know, the one you mentioned. There's also some plugins that will do it for you, depending on, you know, what type of website, you know, you're using. If WordPress has a couple, Smush is a good free one. ShortPixel is a good paid for one. You also would want to try to use a theme that serves different sized images, depending on the size of the monitor or the browser that's looking. And that's going to help page speed a lot. That means if someone's looking on their phone, they're actually going to get a different version of the image than if someone's looking on a really, really big monitor. So that's another thing to pay attention to. And site speed is becoming more important, but you want to make sure to check your analytics and look at where the traffic is coming from and see the percentage of mobile traffic versus desktop traffic. If you get a lot of mobile traffic, most websites nowadays get between 50 to 70% of their traffic from mobile. And that number has been going up every year. So mobile traffic, they don't need a big image. You know, they're looking at it on a phone and they need it fast because they're usually on data. And if 60 or 70% of your traffic is on mobile, you need to pay more attention to this than if for whatever reason, maybe only 30% of your traffic is on mobile.
Mm-hmm. And are alt text still a thing?
Something alt text is still a thing. Yeah. Let's see. Couple
ideas. Explain that for people who aren't familiar with what it is.
Yeah. Alt text is going to be, in essence, the text that lies in the description field of your photo. It's actually was created for, when they have different processing computer programs that will read to people who are visually impaired or blind, and they will read out the description of the image in place of actually them being able to see the image. And so that's where this started, and Google wisely started to use this as descriptions of the photos. And, you know, because Google is actually starting to crawl images, but they're not really good at it in terms of spatial recognition like they are with context of words. So alt text gives you the opportunity to put text to describe these images, which then allows them to show up in image search. Is alt text still a thing? Yes, it's still a thing. Is it high on the list of things you should be doing for your SEO? No, but you should be doing it. Couple tips. Just write a really, really descriptive sentence of the photo. Use lots of descriptors. Rich, you kind of touched on it earlier. Brian, you've mentioned it. You guys are both, I can tell, are kind of keened into it, but use descriptions like this is a luxurious home. Talk about maybe the style of home it is. Talk about maybe the color of home it is. Talk about that you're shooting the front yard versus you're shooting the kitchen. Talk about the style of the design. If you can get all of that into a description of the image, this is going to allow Google to understand exactly what the image is about and then serve it when people are doing these really detailed searches. Don't do the same alt text for every image. I do see that from time to time. That's a disservice that you're doing yourself. But not the most important thing to be doing. There's other on-page things that are more important, but you know, it's kind of good to do all the things. And certainly as an image-based website and brand, you're going to want to lean into that.
Cool. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, which I guess goes back to what we started off with off-page, and that's setting up a Google My Business account and getting reviews, because reviews have been literally single-handedly probably the difference maker in having me rank where I rank for my business. And for some reason, not many people pay so much attention to it. So reviews are, am I correct? Or do reviews play a major, major part in your rankings?
Reviews play a major part in showing up in local search, and they're playing an increasingly larger part according to data studies done each year. So they're going to only get well, I mean, I guess it could change that, but history has shown us over the last 5 years that reviews are becoming increasingly important. And yeah, you're exactly right. Reviews are a local, Google My Business reviews are a local SEO factor. If you don't have a Google My Business account, you need to get one. You need to get one to rank locally. Just go to business.google.com. You can sign up. You got to verify. They got to send you a postcard. They're going to authenticate all that. A lot of Google My Business tips for how to optimize for that. But one of those is to make sure you're getting lots of reviews. Don't solicit for reviews in a payment form. A lot of people will offer that, and that is against the terms of service. But generally speaking, people are more than happy, especially if you make it easy to give you a review. And reviews are really important. One way to figure out, because I get this question all the time, how many reviews, roughly speaking, do you need to have it start having an impact? Open up your Google Maps and do a search in your, for real estate photographer. Make sure you're in that area when you do the search and see what the top three or four listings have in terms of number of reviews. It's a good benchmark. You might also do it from your computer in incognito mode to try to clear out any browser history you have with your website, but try to get a feeling for how many reviews you need. Do you need 25? Do you need 50? Do you need 10? And that's a good benchmark to get the ball rolling. But the more you can make it a part of your business process, like you said, it's probably more impactful than people really give it credit for.
And it's not hard to do. I mean, I have it in my email signature, leave me a review. I personally set up a link from my website /reviews, which then redirects to my Google My Business pop-up. Yep. So it pops right up. So it's pretty, I think if you're in the back end of Google, this used to be, I guess I'm sure they haven't changed it, but there's a little button when you're in the back end that says get a review link. And it gives you a link that you can literally just send out to people to give you a review right on Google. So
I always hesitate to give specific instructions on these things because it's always changing and I'll go out of date as soon as this thing's released. But yes, in general, there's always going to be a way, whether you do it through the front end listing, whether you do it through your back end listing, there's going to be a way to send out a unique review link to your clients. Make it easy on them, because if you ask someone, hey, can you leave me a review? They'll say yes, and they will forget. They won't, they don't have any bad intentions, more than likely. They won't get around to it.
Cool. All right. Let's talk PFRE. So,
okay.
So you now, I guess you manage, is that the best title to give you? You manage the PFRE blog.
Yeah, the 201 creative team, we run the PFRE blog from, strategy all the way down to execution. We worked on the site throughout 2020, and then the transition happened at the beginning of the year in 2021. So that's where things are at right now.
Okay. So you were an integral part of the redesign they released last year and all that?
Yeah, we weren't the company that was hired to do any of the design. We were the company that was hired to make sure everything connected properly and make sure the transition happened smoothly and then fix anything that broke before and after.
Cool. So as far as, what is your role, I guess, in managing PFRE, just for people out there? It's weird because, everyone knows Larry as the guy who ran PFRE for however many years. And now, you guys come along. So, and Larry pretty much did everything by himself. So what is your role there? Is it coming up with content? Is it, helping out with the contest? Is it all of the above? Is it everything else that PFRE does?
Yeah, our role is to do all the things that PFRE does as a website and as a blog. We come at this from a little bit of a different angle, but I think we think it's a great angle. We not only do client work for their websites and have been doing so for many years, but we also run a collection of websites on our own. And so we understand the finer metrics that are involved in having a website that nowadays is a holistic collection of trending topics, organic search components, and evergreen components as well. And so that's really where the PFRE website needs to go and needs to iterate in order to stay current and stay modern, or at least stay up to par with what is expected of a website these days. The design got a major facelift and a major upgrade last year. And that had just been released, still a lot of tweaks that need to be made to that. But I think from a backend standpoint, The website was extremely out of date, really cluttered in a way that made it very unnavigable, very difficult to find things. Many of the topics have been covered four or five different times in different blog posts or different articles. A lot of broken stuff, a lot of confusing stuff. And there weren't a lot of evergreen topics that have been written about. Most of the topics were really, really trending at this specific time they were written, but they didn't stand up to the test of time. And so our job is to go in and try to keep all the best things about the PFRE blog. You talked about the contests. They're happening every single month. You talked about all the articles and all the different interaction that happens on that, while also bringing it up to you know, today's standard and making it more of a resource for not only the experienced real estate photographer, but also the up and the coming real estate photographer, which that industry is growing rapidly. You know, real estate photography is just blowing up in terms of a niche in the photography world. And we want to make sure that the PFRE blog is as relevant for a newer real estate photographer as it is for an experienced real estate photographer.
And tell me, what is evergreen? I think I know what it means, but tell the audience what that is.
Yeah. Evergreens, it's kind of a marketing term for whether it's an article or a piece of content, something on your social media page that stands up over and over that is not date specific. It's a piece of information. You know, obviously little bits of it could go out of date as technology changes or something like that. But the concept is something that people are looking for help on a consistent ongoing basis. And therefore the answer or the content that you provide is relevant for an ongoing basis.
So the PFRE blog has, in my opinion, been unfairly criticized lately. And I'll explain where I'm going. I've seen a lot of posts say, you know, look, the blog got very corporate nowadays, blah, blah, blah. It, you know, everyone's, you know, they're trying to just get money out of people, blah, 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 whatever the case is. And, you know, personally, I think it's a little unfair because Larry, while he was managing this for however many years, was retired and this was his hobby. And this is what he did for fun. He didn't want to make money off it. He didn't need to make in the couple of bucks that he might've made off it. It was, you know, petty cash for him to go out and have dinner with his wife. You know what I mean? He wasn't making a living off it. Mm-hmm. Now you guys come in and, you know, you're running it the way I personally think it should be run. And, you know, it is being run like a business. Now, obviously Brandon, took over PFRE and, you know, this is not a hobby for Brandon. He has a full-time job as a real estate photographer. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't mean to put you under the gun. So I hope I'm not doing that, but
please do,
maybe explain from your perspective to people who think, you know, PFRE wasn't what it used to. And I personally, like I said, I don't think it's a fair criticism because of the nature of Larry running it as a hobby versus somebody who then invested in it. As a business pretty much. And people think it might be too corporate now or whatever the case is.
Well, PFRE isn't what it used to be. But that really isn't predominantly because of who's running it or predominantly because of whether it's being run like a business or not, which all those statements you made are very true, by the way. But that isn't the primary reason. It's because the way people consume content nowadays is vastly different than when Larry ran the PFRE blog. Mm-hmm. If you go back and you look at the content that was on the blog when the PFRE website was in its heyday and Larry was running it, it looks like a social media post because social media wasn't around then. And so, yes, that is how the PFRE blog was run. Well, if we continue to run the blog that way, no one will go because that's not how people engage with websites and content nowadays on the internet. So the PFRE blog has changed in its nature. And it's because that's what necessitates with, you know, evolving technology and the types of spaces that people use to interact. One of the most valuable things about the PFRE blog, and I know this because I've poured through thousands of articles since we took over, is the comments. The comments are the valuable part of the PFRE blog on those articles. And it was an ongoing dialogue. People don't interact with web content that way anymore. When was the last time you left a comment on a blog post or consistently popped up to a website on your own volition every single day? We don't consume content that way anymore. And so whether or not, and I'm happy to engage in it as well, by the way, but whether or not it's turned into more of a corporate feel or not, the website is slowly more and more aligning itself with the way that people consume content today.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, what you're saying makes, for me, for instance, I don't ever, and I'll be perfectly honest, I don't ever go to the PFRE blog unless I see in my inbox a new article was written and I click on the link and go to it. But I couldn't tell you the last time, maybe when I was just getting into this business and I was learning as much as I could, that's probably the last time I went on a daily basis to the blog just to look and learn. But I wait for that email to come in from you guys. And when I see a new article was written, I click on the link and that's how I go and read. So
yeah. And that would be, you need to be driven to websites nowadays, the days of, you know, people going on their own volition. And I can, by the way, I can see this in the analytics. I can look at the direct traffic to the homepage or to the specific blog role and watch over the last 5-10 years as it's dropped significantly. People interact very differently with that. Now, that's not to say that, you know, we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I think we're trying to blend the way that people used to use PFRE with the way that people want to use PFRE now. And no matter what happens, change is hard. Some people are going to like it. Some people aren't. And that's how it is. I don't think that the site has gotten more corporate. I think that the site is kind of evolving maybe at a more rapid pace because it's trying to make up for lost time. I think things look different. I think things are in different places. And I think the content, the type of content that's being written is blending between what a newer real estate photographer wants and what an older real estate photographer wants, a more experienced real estate photographer wants. And then there's just the natural gap that myself, I'm not a real estate photographer. I don't have the amazing connections that Brandon has. And the amazing, you know, Rolodex of experienced photographers to call when he needs a really current trending post. I bug Brandon about it, don't get me wrong, but as you know, he's pretty busy. And so so I'd love to see more trending topics on the PFRE blog, and I'd love to work with photographers who want to sit down and work with us to write those. So, you know, I agree with that statement, by the way, if that's, you know, one of the underlying statements. I'd like to get more experienced real estate photographers to help us out with more of the trending topics. There's a gap there right now, but we're pretty new at this. You know, we're pretty new on getting in there and getting our feet wet. And so we're going to continue to focus on improving that. But that's a big focus of ours as we go into the latter parts of this first year we've been working on it.
Cool. And besides for, you know, what you just said about, you know, getting contributors and trending topics, what are there any other plans or goals for the future that you may be able to divulge of, you know, where PFRE is going to go?
Yeah. Getting the site technically sound was our first order of business. That took 3 months instead of 3 weeks. I thought it would take a while, but it did take a long time to clean up a lot of the technical problems and challenges for the site. Then we've been embarking on a mission to try to make sure that the site is publishing content that is relevant for a general real estate photographer. And I say general, meaning both entry level all the way up to experienced. The site needs to have that base of content that is very, very specific and trustworthy for a real estate photographer. Beyond that, one of the first areas we'd like to look at putting more effort and energy into is the contest. The contest has always been such a significant factor for PFRE and for the industry. Every single photographer that I get the phone with and have a conversation with talks about how influential it was to participate in that, how influential it was to win that. And we still get the same number of entries that we were getting well before we took over. So it's not like anything has happened there. But I think that there's some new ways to bring life to the contest, some ways that harness, you know, more current, more contemporary ways of bringing that to light. I think we can do a lot of things to update that and make that more exciting and make that more compelling for people. It's kind of hard to enter right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Not very
user-friendly. You know, one criticism I always said is why are the entries never posted on social media? Why is PFRE not on social media?
Yeah, it's a gold mine for social media. I mean, who wouldn't want to look at that and satiate themselves with the imagery and why it worked and why it won and stuff? So, yeah, that's going to be one of our first orders of business once we kind of get the content side of things at least a little bit more stabilized.
Cool. Well, it's exciting stuff. And I know the conference is coming up. Do you guys play a part in that, or you're not, you know, directly involved?
Not directly involved with it, but I mean, we're one of the go-to spots for real estate photographers to learn about things like the conference, and we're huge supporters of what Brandon's doing. I'm so excited to go to my first one and meet everyone. Brandon and I had our first or second call about the conference just last week, so we're already in the works to plans how we're gonna help promote that and make sure that as many real estate photographers can attend that want to. I'm looking forward to seeing the lineup as well. I actually spoke at it last year, so I got to be a part of the speaker side of things. Yeah. And kind of, you know, learn and listen. That was before we were involved in the website, but
are you going to be presenting or you can't say that yet?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see. Brandon has not asked me yet, but, I would say that we'll be involved in some way from a website standpoint, but that's, you know, that conference is just growing so, so well. And to see it do so well during a online COVID environment, as someone in a digital marketing agency, we helped a lot of online conferences last year. Mm-hmm. And it's really tough to get good engagement in an online conference, especially one that wasn't created to be an online conference and had to bend and adapt last year. And so to see the success and the engagement that it had last year makes me really excited to go and attend this year, because I think it's going to be this compounding of excitement and engagement that you saw over the last couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like you said, last year was all online, but you know, 2 years ago, 2019, I can attest, as can Rich, it was a hell of a time. So.
Well, I will be there and see you guys there in November. Hopefully I get to meet face to face and in person, and same with so many other real estate photographers that I've gotten to interact with so far on the website.
Yeah. I plan on going as of now, unless something changes, but it's going to be a fun time.
Agreed.
Cool. So, Jared, why don't you again tell everyone where they can find you on your website, if they need to get in touch with you, if they want some marketing help for their businesses, if they want to even just go and buy your course. And I will link to this all in the show notes anyway, but just let people know where they can find you. Also, if you guys have social media accounts for your business and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Our website's 201creative.com, 201creative.
Where's the 201 from?
Well, 201 is the basically the internet's code for something new has been created. And so
201 is the area code in North Jersey, right near me.
Oh, okay. Well, not the area. Yeah, probably a good couple good uses of 201. Yeah. But that's where the company name came from. But 201creative.com. There's a bunch of stuff on there. We've got a lot of blog posts that go in depth on a lot of these topics we've hit upon. We do offer local photography SEO services and 3 and 6 month packages to get you do a lot of the legwork for you and kind of sharpshoot it. And then the Pro EDU course, if you want to, you know, just dive in and kind of become that marketing expert and go through all the pillars that we talk about, from SEO to blog writing and content writing to social media, Facebook, Pinterest, those types of topics, to email marketing, the Pro EDU course is on proedu.com, and you can also probably get it from the show notes here.
All right, great. And if there's any blog topics on your own blog that might be specifically relevant to what we discussed, just shoot them over to me and I'll be sure to include those in the show notes as well.
We'll do. Yeah, there are a couple that would be relevant.
All right, great. And with that, I want to thank you for coming on with us. I'm looking forward to, obviously, like I said, meeting you in Vegas. And it's been a pleasure chatting, you know, very minimally SEO, but at least giving people enough of a foundation to know what they need to start thinking about. So
yeah, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, both of you. It's been an honor. I know I've been able to listen to a couple of these podcasts over the last couple of months, and it's really an honor to be here. So thank you for having me.
Great. Thanks.
Our pleasure.
I'm going to end with a word from PhotoOp. Who doesn't like free editing? PhotoOp is now offering $100 of free editing to Shooting Spaces listeners. You can choose to work with their team of trained editors starting at just $1 per image, or choose to work directly with an editor to have them learn your specific style. Don't need editing help? PhotoOp also provides virtual staging, property websites, photo delivery, and website design and development services. PhotoOp even offers specialized virtual assistants starting under $7 an hour. Perfect if you're looking to add an assistant to help with admin and marketing tasks. Head over to photoop.net/shootingspaces or click the PhotoOp link in the Shooting Spaces website to redeem your $100 credit, or simply mention Shooting Spaces when you sign up to receive 10 free credits to try out any PhotoOp services. Again, photoop.net/shootingspaces. And with that, Jared, again, thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure chatting, and hopefully mm-hmm. we stay in touch.
Sounds good. Agreed.
And Rich, yeah, as always,
looking forward to seeing what you do with the with the website and the blog. And PFRE is a good thing. And anybody out there that's not familiar with photography for real estate, go check it out. What is it? PFRE.net or photographyforrealestate.net.
Yep.
And with that, I'd just like to say again, thank you, Jared, for coming on. Thank you, Brian. And everybody out there, until we meet again, until the next podcast, go out and shoot some spaces.
This has been Shooting Spaces. For more episodes, visit shootingspacespodcast.com and visit our education site at shootingspaces.net.